Hello, I'm Mark Steiner.
And I'm Anthony McCarthy.
Reminding you on our way to this conversation, the Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the University of Maryland Hospital for Children, offering primary, specialty, and critical care for all children, from the smallest babies to the biggest teenagers. For more information, learn about their specialty outpatient locations throughout the state and national programs, 1-800-492-5538 is the number. So over the weekend, there were interesting articles in the New York Times, many other places, about the effect that Citizens United is having on campaigns, the super PACs that are actually, some of them are 501c4s, which means they don't have to say who they their contributors are.
That's right.
And as well as they're nonprofits. And many people are questioning why the IRS calls them nonprofits, because they're supposed to be organizations for the betterment of the social welfare. So all this is really changing the nature of our elections, I think, Anthony. You know, over $1 billion being raised on the Republican side by corporations.
And we keep hearing, Mark, over and over again that conservative factions really all over the country are determined to arm Mitt Romney with the money he needs, very important money he needs to take on an incumbent president. And many of the leading Koch brothers and others are committing to make sure that their PACs raise millions and millions of dollars. And as you said, their goal is to raise over $1 billion to put the message out about the kind of president they want and the kind of president they believe Barack Obama has been. And we know, Mark, if anybody follows the news at all, the president's worried about this. He has mentioned it several times. He's making fundraising calls on Air Force One in between campaign stops. He is really making the appeal that he has to have these dollars if he's going to be able to continue to be successful in this election, but really ultimately to fend off what's going to be, and you and I know this, and our listeners probably know this, it's going to be a very, very nasty campaign.
We're joined on the phone by Lindsay Mark Lewis, who is executive director of the Progressive Policy Institute, and Trey Lewis, president of the Baltimore Area Young Republicans. Lindsay Mark Lewis and Trey Lewis, welcome. Good to have you both with us.
I assume they're no relation.
I don't think they are.
We're related somewhere on the onside.
You never know.
That's true.
Lindsay Mark Lewis, let me begin this by talking about just your analysis of how you think the Citizens United ruling, given all we've seen in the last 2 years from the 2010 congressional elections to what's happening in this presidential election, are changing the nature of American elections, or if they are or not.
Yeah, they definitely are, and it's somewhat of a scary moment in our history. It's a continued 40-year gamble by some rich folks and rich corporations to lessen the power of national parties and local parties and put more control into their own hands. You know, part of your introduction was about, you know, how the Koch brothers and so forth are going to talk about what kind of president they want. The real use of these super PACs this year is going to be about voter suppression, and that's going to come in, you know, having extremely negative TV ads, and then moving on from TV ads, it's going to be nasty direct mail and phone calls and misleading up to election day to try to suppress Democratic vote, and it's gotten out of control, and I have some faith in the American voter that will come back around, and this may blow up in some of their faces.
But, Lindsay, this is Anthony McCarthy. Explain what you mean by voter suppression. Is it that they plan to just wear out potential voters with nastiness and questions, or are they really going to put fear in some folks, some constituencies, like the very crucial Hispanic vote, that there may be problems with their participation?
Well, one of the big issues with PACs is there's no controlling authority involved with them. I mean, these folks are going to close up after Election Day. Mm-hmm. And unlike when this money went through the party committees, you know, and candidates, you had a responsibility to continue that reputation past Election Day. So it's going to happen in two ways. One is, you know, obviously the more negative ads that run on TV, it turns off voters at the marginal limits of it. But the worst part what these folks are going to do, because there's no responsibility here, there's no person that's going to be held responsible, is the potential to, you know, say in Florida, send 1 million postcards out with the incorrect precinct thus, you know, people show up to the wrong precinct. Are they really going to spend another half hour finding the right precinct on election day? And same with phone calls. I mean, that there's you can definitely see that that's going to happen. The question is, on what scale is it going to happen? So it's not so much the fear of the voters, it's the misleading of the voters.
Trey Lewis, your take on what Citizens United will do to our elections or not?
Well, it's two parts to it to me. In a business aspect of it, I'm always in favor of the market. I'm always in favor of having as much people participate as possible. I feel as though when you have a super PAC, to me, I look at it in a very business sense. It's just you just don't have enough people participating, or I should say their participation is so minimum that it doesn't matter, and they don't feel as though there's any worth to it. And that's one aspect of it. The second aspect of it is that I don't feel as though we give the American voters enough credit. No matter how much money someone spends on something or a campaign or one entity, the voters still have to vote. It's just like Hollywood. If they make a very bad movie and they spend $200 million making the movie, they're expecting people to come out to see that movie. However, the people still have to leave home and go to the movie theater. And if it's a bad movie, it's a bad movie. And that's the moviegoer's decision, not Hollywood. Hollywood did a lot to make people go out to see that movie. However, it's still up to the moviegoer to do that. The voter can look and say the Super PAC spent this amount of money, or the Koch brothers spent this amount of money for Romney, or Sarah Jessica Parker had a $40,000 dinner plate meal for Barack Obama. It doesn't matter. The fact of the matter is that the American citizen, the American voter, at the end of the day will decide this election. And I don't think we give them enough credit, regardless of who gives to what campaign, the American voter still decides this election.
Lindsay, this is Anthony again. Could you explain to me, I was half listening to several reports today about the precedent that's being set by these super PACs and the fact that the Republicans or the conservative forces have, for one of the first times, I don't know, in an election cycle against an incumbent, are outraising the incumbent. Is that true?
Yeah, I mean, that's true. You got to remember also, Anthony, prior to the Super PAC formation a couple of years ago in 2010, 2008, really, you know, the Super PAC was the unions. The Super PAC were
let me correct you on that.
Workers' unions for Democrats, and now that these groups have raised enough money to equal those groups that for decades have given to Democrat campaigns, now we talk about campaign refinancing reforms because now Republicans are getting their lion's share of it.
Let me let Lindsay respond and come right back to Trey. Lindsay, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, let's get the facts correct. The Chamber of Commerce has outspent unions on election activity for the last 40 years. It's not even close that how the business community has outspent unions. It's a good talking point, but it's not factual at all. I forgot the first part, Anthony. I got lost.
I was wondering if what I'm hearing is correct, that for one of the first times for an incumbent president, Barack Obama is being outraised, or the Democrats are being outraised by the Republicans. And that's never happened with an incumbent in the White House. Is that correct?
That's my understanding. I tried to actually look that up today.
I tried to look it up just before we came on the air, and I couldn't find even the quotes that I heard earlier on the radio.
Yeah, it's not easy to search the old FEC reports. my only question would be what Reagan did against Carter.
That's 80. Right. Mm-hmm.
But outside of that, this would certainly be the first time that's happened. And it is changing the game. But and going back to what the other gentleman was talking about earlier, super PACs are not about including more people in the system. Their entire purpose is to exclude as many people as possible. That's why they focus, you know, on voter suppression, and that's why the precursor to this, to the Koch brothers spending all this money, were these efforts to, you know, do voter ID laws in Pennsylvania and Florida and Texas. It's all about reducing Democratic turnout. It's not about getting more people to participate in the system.
My question is that what is Obama's, when Obama first set, before the Republican candidate was even nominated, or I should say presumably going to be nominated, which is Mitt Romney, when Obama said that he was going to set up to make a billion-dollar war chest, what type of measure was that for? For giggles? I don't understand. I mean, it's on both sides. They're going to make it so they're going to raise as much money as possible so they can fool the other side. I think it's very subjective, and it's very naive to say that Republicans are raising money to do evil things in elections while Democrats are some holier-than-thou entity. It's both sides.
Let's get that correct right now.
As much money as possible to fool the other voters so they can get to win elections.
So Obama had 700,000 donors in June. 700,000 donors on an average of $52. Romney is nowhere close. I don't know what his average was yet, but he's getting million-dollar checks compared to the $52 that Obama's getting. There is no comparison. It's not. You're not the same ballpark.
There is a comparison. In New York City, a few months ago, George Clooney and Sarah Jessica Parker had $40,000 plate meal tickets for President Obama, and he collected $2 million in 2 hours. I don't understand how, on one side, you're blaming that this big corporate influence, but on the other side, you totally ignore it. It's the same thing. You can't call out one and not call out the other. It's the same exact thing.
Lindsay?
Yeah, well, true. And the fundraisers that George Clooney held and Sarah Jessica Parker were not for the Super PAC. They were for the campaign and the DNC. Completely different money. That money is regulated and controlled.
And it's spread out.
Exactly.
It's spread out throughout the party, congressional campaigns, and the senatorial elections. It's spread out.
But, exactly. And a $40,000 check compared to – $40,000 is a lot of money to me.
Me too.
It's not $1 million. But the other key part about it is that's going to the party committee, in which there is a responsibility for that party, whether it's the RNC or the DNC, to still be around on January of 2013. The super PACs have zero responsibility. We don't even know who's running them. We don't know where the money's going. And there's zero legal oversight of these committees right now.
So I'm going to open the phones here, 410-319-8888. And wherever you're listening from, I'd like to hear your thoughts and where you live here, Maryland or elsewhere, on your ideas about what Citizens United ruling may or may not, how it may or may not affect our electoral process. I think that, you know, when people think about this, look at this. One of the issues that people are concerned about is that, let's take the Supreme Court ruling that just took place where they refused to take a look at the Montana law. Montana law that was made in 1912, because then there was a progressive Republican movement that saw that corporations were taking over local elections, and they put a stop to it in Montana by having a law that did not allow corporations to contribute and be part of elections. The question is, whose government is this? Does this government belong to the people? Is it our government? Or is it a government by corporations? And that's what people are feeling. Last time we had this show, we thought we were going to have fireworks, and we had here people from the far left, but from the left, we had liberals, conservatives, and people who are libertarians on the right. After I thought we were going to have a discussion saying, oh, no, Citizens United's okay, everybody in the room to a person was saying, no, this is going to destroy our democracy. Maybe it will, maybe it won't. And we want to hear what your thoughts are about that, 410-319-8888, and what you do about it. If you do think that, and how do we kind of – how do you get control of spending in elections? Is public funding of elections, is that an impossibility? Is something we want or don't want? How do we do this? 410-319-8888. We'll come back to both of our guests, Lindsay Mark Lewis, Executive Director of the Progressive Policy Institute, Trey Lewis, no relation, President of the Baltimore Area Republicans, here with Anthony McCarthy and Mark Steiner, 410-319-8888. And Lamar, you're on the air.
Thank you, Mr. Stein. That's the shortest time I've ever been on hold.
Well, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Well, you know, I really shouldn't be saying my age, but I've been following politics ever since I was in the third grade in 1980. And one of the main problems that I'm seeing with this potential election, you know, I don't really want to get into the money because I don't have any money and I can't raise any money. My main issue is the fact that everybody could potentially not have the option to vote or not the ability to vote. You know, if you remember, the economy was really bad in 2010. Every single Republican governor said, you know, we're going to make it our priority to create jobs and, you know, end Obamacare and all of that. But one of the first things that they started working on, well, actually two things, was voter ID laws because of potential voter fraud, which didn't really exist, and abortion issues. But we're not going to talk about abortion, but I'm really concerned that everybody's not going to have the ability to vote. You know, it happened in 2008. Everybody was allowed to vote, and we saw who won. So that's my main issue. And it's just, you know, I really want everybody to be able to vote.
But, Lamar, I'm glad you raised the issue. I mean, let me just talk for a minute and go right to Anthony for our guest that, you know, today the lawsuit began over the Texas voter ID law. And when the Voting Rights Act of 1965 was passed, Section 5 of that law gave the federal government the right to supervise and go in and oversight over states that had histories of discrimination against certain groups of voters. So that's what Attorney General Holder used to create this lawsuit against with Texas, which is going to be very critical to this election. Texas may not be a swing state, but it clearly is. It seems to be swinging in one direction, but it is a very critical lawsuit, I think. And let's get our. Unless you want to jump in and throw
it. No. I'll add
Lindsay, then go to Trey.
Sure. I mean, this is what I think we all should be scared about. And you know, just up the road from you in Pennsylvania, we've got this new voter ID law. You know, I think there was a story out last week that 18% of the residents of Philadelphia don't have IDs. And under the current law, they won't be allowed to vote. That's 18% in the city of Philly. And it's a disgusting new realm of these of the right wing. They did it through the ALEC group over the last couple of years. And it was the coronation of years of trying to suppress the Democratic vote, and they got away with it. And it is something that we should focus on across the board. You know, and the press should shine some light onto this.
Trey,
the only
thoughts?
People who have a legitimate cry to say that they are truly being suppressed are people who live in southern states, mostly southern states, who are ex-felons and are now released from prison. Those are the only people who should really have a true riff as to something as far as voter suppression, because they can't vote. And they're actually citizens who've been released from prison, they served their time, and now they can vote. I mean, now they can't vote. They still can't vote, I should say. Those are the only people who are being suppressed. To say that someone can't, an adult, can't get an ID and properly identify themselves to go to vote, it's a shame that the left is even having a cause for concern for that. That's a responsibility for someone to simply get an identification card to vote. And this would upheld voter integrity, which I thought would be the key principle and against voter suppression, is making sure voter integrity is upheld.
Right.
So
do you have any evidence of voter fraud?
Have a cry about
but I'm curious.
Trey, is there any evidence in the last 30 years of voter fraud in Pennsylvania? The answer is no.
I think
you have a Republican state senator
saying,
who comes out screaming in excitement after this.
One second, Trey. Let me let Lindsay finish. You can come back. Lindsay?
Trey, what about the Republican state senator who came out of Pennsylvania screaming about his excitement that we've now won the state from Mitt Romney only because they're suppressing the vote in Philadelphia?
You're going to take an isolated state senator's remarks in regards to voter identification and saying that the goal was to suppress the vote for Barack Obama.
Correct.
Is that what you're using? Is that the fact that you're going to use?
I'm using the fact that Republicans passed this bill in Pennsylvania, knowing that just in one city, 18% of the voters don't have IDs. The entire purpose of that bill, funded by the Koch brothers, was to suppress the Democratic turnout. Period. It's beyond criminal at this point. It's a disgusting new Republican right-wing move to suppress
people from
voting.
No, what's disgusting is that you think that it's an engrossed suppression to say someone should have a voter identification card. Why are you so against someone not having an ID? I don't understand that.
Have you ever had to show an ID when you voted in the state of Maryland, Trey, ever?
Unfortunately, I did, and I was actually appalled by it. I had my voter identification card with me. I had my driver's license, and I wanted to show that I, in fact, was Trey Lewis going to vote, and the person shoved me away and said, no, we don't need that. I was actually, I felt very uncomfortable. We kind of be going like to an airport saying.
But didn't you sign? Didn't you sign the voter card when you went in? They have your signature
for
right
the
there.
The confirmation.
You said what now?
When you go to vote, you have to write your signature, confirm that it's you, and they check it against your signature.
I don't. You know, I wouldn't mind whatever measure there is, as long as
that's what they do.
That's Trey. That's the whole point. That's the check right now, and it's pretty honest. You'd have to be over the top to walk into a precinct and, you know, state somebody's name. What if that person already voted? You know, you have.
And Trey, just let me ask you, not just
then we'll
Trey,
go to the phones after this.
But I'm just sitting here trying because I don't believe in conspiracies. I don't want to believe in conspiracies. But in a state like Pennsylvania, where there's probably a 0% of voter fraud ever, what was the purpose of this ID law? I mean, I'm trying to figure out. I mean, I understand where you're saying about, well, people should have ID. I understand all of that. But what was the purpose of the law if there is no voter fraud?
Well, I mean, again, saying that there's no voter fraud is like saying how many people cheat on taxes. And no one's going to admit to that. And no one's going to do it and say anything unless you actually have someone to be caught. I mean, I don't know the entire history of the election of Pennsylvania for every single township and county and municipality they have. But I do know this, is that across the board, across the country, we still have 2 million people who are dead that are still on the voter laws across 50 states. I do know that.
No, you don't know that. That's an accusation that's not been proven. It's been made by a fairly conservative group that is trying to make a point, but that's not proven.
Well, it's not proven that there hasn't been voter fraud either.
Yes, it has.
It has been proven. You know, there is no evidence. You had George Bush in the White House with Karl Rove and his cronies. You don't think they would have filed voter fraud charges during the 8 years? Of course they would. There was no evidence of it. They didn't do it.
Let me go back to the phones at 410-319-8888. Rob, you're on the air. Hi, Rob, you're on the air.
Thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Can you hear me, sir?
Yes, we can.
Yeah, thank you. What I want to comment on, basically, I don't want to comment so much on the campaign going at it, such as the Koch brothers, the Bilderberg Group, and also AIPAC, you know, that infamous group action committee from Israel. I want to focus mainly on the recycling of the campaign money through U.S. taxpayers as it is contributed. For example, most American citizens don't know that through our tax dollars, you know, we give money for campaign financing and so forth. And what happens is, particularly through the campaign money that we give, the money we give to Israel, what happens is that a lot of times they will recycle their money and give it right back to us through their AIPAC committee. So a lot of people realize that, in essence, the U.S. taxpayer is basically funding the Israeli lobbyist groups to basically, you know, overrun campaigns with campaign donations. It's an established, documented fact that in the 2006 campaign with George Bush, the AIPAC actually contributed 35% of the Republicans' campaign donations, and
all due respect, Rob, just to somebody, I'm not a big fan of AIPAC. Let me put that out there up front. Then I never have been, which and just make it popular in some circles in my world. But but the reality is that the reality is that most of AIPAC money comes from American Jewish community,
And it goes to both Democrats and Republicans.
And 35% of the Republican donations did not come from AIPAC.
I can't imagine. Yeah,
they have power, but
not
that much power.
A lot of money directly. It's some of their members might, but AIPAC is not a political contributor. That's the facts aren't correct on that.
Let me get back to the phone. So if you want to jump in, 410-319-8888. Mike, you're on the air.
Yes, Mark. When you say you're not a fan of AIPAC, and that makes some trouble for you in some circles. That's an understatement, especially in the circles I travel in. You should know that.
I'm sure that's true.
That anyone who's not in favor of the state of Israel, I should say actually the country of Israel, because there are those within the observant community who really would prefer the state of Israel to be a religious state, a Jewish state, as what God commands it to be. However, they would want to keep it in existence, and as much as. The Jews there.
What do you think of Citizens United?
Yeah, that's what we're talking about today. So if you want to come back to that, that'd be great.
All right, so I want to call about this topic, and that is this. I'm just amazed at how the panel has tunnel vision, thinking about the elections and how much of a change that might bring to America, good or bad. And as much as we have political upheaval all over the world, we have tsunamis, earthquakes, floods, even in the climates of the world, there's unbelievable changes happening. And we have Iran threatening to wipe Israel off the map even more.
Well, we're talking about Citizens United, Michael. What is your point?
My point is, you're talking about rearranging the chairs on the Titanic.
Okay.
America is finished. There's no way of coming back, no matter who wins the election, because it's so deeply in debt because of the policies that Obama would like to put into effect that are going to be even more ruinous for the economy.
And that has to do with Citizens United. How?
What?
What does this have to do with Citizens United and its effect on our elections?
Because as far as the Republicans are concerned, and I vote Republican, I want you to know that it amounts to a pox on both houses, because Romney is not going to be any better than Obama.
Okay.
Thank you.
But we will come back to kind of the focus in our discussion here, and let's try to get another caller who might do that, and let's go to Russ. You're on the air.
Hello, Russ.
Russ, you're on the air.
Greetings, Mark. How are you?
Very well. Welcome.
Mark, I just wanted to say two things. One is this. Citizens United decision was actually a 5-4 decision, and the linchpin vote was Justice Kennedy. Now, I don't know, you know, we as Americans have this peculiar phenomenon about coming to conclusions and having opinions about things that we know little to nothing about. And I say that because if you read Justice Kennedy's decision, the linchpin paragraph said, based upon full disclosure, as long as the people knew who was giving the money, it should not make a difference. And that's what caused him to cast the vote that he did. Okay, now, before we get, you know, to read the decision if you're going to give an answer to that. Secondly, I want to talk about this ID thing because it's a very insidious and egregious kind of a deal. If you go down to Marketplace, you don't have to leave the city or the state to do this. Go right down to Marketplace in the harbor and talk to the doormen, the guys who are front door to clubs, and ask them what is their number one problem. You might think it's rowdyism. You might think it's hooliganism. But you know what it is? It's IDs, determining whose ID is legitimate and whose isn't, because there are so many false, phony IDs out here that the kids get a hold of to try to drink before they're 21. So this is my key point as to why this is such an egregious issue, that the ID can be as phony as the person they're trying to claim standing before them. And like your other guest said, there is no evidence of voter fraud on the basis of ID. I mean, we're not in Chicago. So thanks, Mark.
Chicago. So, Lindsay, I'd like to focus a bit on both of you, on the Justice Kennedy issue and what his ruling was. Also, how that affects or doesn't affect the whole question of what a 501c4 means and who should get it and who shouldn't.
And before you answer that, Lindsay Kumar, can I just say, could you really, in very quick terms, so we can get back to the phones also, explain what how these super PACs are organized? Are they organized as nonprofits? Are they organized as 501c4s, 501c3s? How do they get this very specific status that the Supreme Court has now decided they are, in fact, free speech and individuals?
Right. The quick cliff note version of this is, you know, these are IRS designations. You know, they are considered nonprofits, although a contributor to a 501c4 does not get the right to
claim it
as a tax deductible. But the organization also does not have to release that donor's name, which is a loophole in the law. It was, you know, made to protect old nonprofits that were actually doing welfare and education work. And then going back to the court case, the caller had it exactly right. I mean, that's what Justice Kennedy and the majority opinion actually said, that as long as there was full disclosure and that there was no coordination, which obviously is a lot harder than the court understood to enforce, that it would be constitutional to have these no limit groups.
And so, Trey, do you want to comment on that as well?
Yeah, I would comment and just say that, I mean, again, we're talking about the fact is that a nonprofit, or I should say the super PACs, they're formed to help out campaigns. And essentially, I mean, it's someone's money. If someone wants to spend their money whatever way, I think they have the freedom and the right to, and entitlement to do that. I mean, is it something that we would rather not see? Of course. I mean, my $100 donation to the Romney campaign, it pales in comparison to someone's, you know, $1 million campaign like Bill Maher did for Barack Obama. The fact of the matter is that he can spend his money however he wants to see fit. Again, at the end of the day, it's still up to the individual voter to say, I want to vote for this person based upon this, not because of a negative ad or whatever. It's because of the record, because of what I believe the principles are, and I believe it's best for the nation.
But I guess my only concern there is, Trey, that these super PACs, their mission has to be larger than a campaign. It has to be about the general good and the welfare of the people or an issue. It can't be specifically for Romney. It can't be specifically for Obama. It really has to be, or at least they're called and mandated to be.
But, Anthony, that's what the voters for. I mean, how they spend their money is how they spend their money. Why do people buy cotton candy at the carnival? It's not going to fill them up. It's bad for them. They like it because it tastes good, and they want cotton candy. How someone spends their money is how they spend their money. At the end of the day, what decides this election will be the actual vote.
But what happens to elections when all that sounds good, people make their own minds up. But Lindsay, I mean, one of the things that I think that we have to kind of look at in America is if you're spending $1 billion on an election, sending out cards with wrong precinct names on them, with convincing you dump $500,000 into a little teeny election where no money is spent, which is happening all over North Carolina, and people slander the other candidates and they lose because that becomes people's consciousness. I think that's the danger, Lindsay, that we're seeing, and I don't know I think people are wrestling in America what can control that.
More danger to me, Mark.
Wait, Jeff, Trey, let me go to Lindsay and then come right back to you.
It is the extreme danger that and what these, some of these groups are doing, you know, especially with Karl Rove's two different groups, is they're not releasing these donors. So, you know, we may know Sheldon Adelson, and that's great, Trey, that you took his little shot at Bill Maher, but the big difference is we know Bill Maher gave that money. We don't know where the $300 million that Karl Rove's got came from. And who's actually buying this election? And then the fear is where's that money going? If you're in a congressional race where it costs $1.5 million, which is obviously more than it should cost, but if somebody puts $1 million into that race in the last 3 weeks, you can't respond as a Democratic or Republican candidate and defend yourself or change the election, and it's over at that point.
And I guess, Mark, for me, I am really scared about what it does to, as Trey mentioned, the free will of the voters, because at that point, it's not about the voters anymore. It's about being able to control a Secretary of State race and dumping millions of dollars in on one side. And then it really does. I mean, you could say, well, voters still show up and vote. But if you are pushing out false information or misleading information on either side, and you do it strategically and time it, then it really does change. It takes a lot of that power away from voters. And in a race like Secretary of State or State Representative or City Council, money could be control. Money could be the deciding factor, not the issues facing those constituents. It's a scary prospect to me.
Well, I think also the biggest part is that, I mean, the reason why they're raising so much money, I think what gets lost in the shuffle is campaigns cost a lot of money. That's because TV ads cost a lot of money, and they're making money hand over fist because they know that negative ad works. They know that these type of things, these passion-type politics work. And that's a bigger problem, I believe, than just a super PAC giving money. It's that the cost of campaigns is so much. And the reason why it's being given so much, I mean, it is kind of a two-fold system, is that is because so many people can contribute money. But also we got to look at the business aspect of it, is that these places that do make these signs and make these handbills and does the TV ads.
Man, but that's not what's driving it. I mean, what the danger is of the people is the man who's behind the curtain. It's the man behind the mask. It's the Wizard of Oz. It's the Klansman behind a mask. You don't know who they are. And people will not say who they are. And it's a way for corporations to give billions of dollars, hundreds of millions of dollars at this, to kind of have their way without being known who they are. I mean,
and if you're an incumbent candidate and you have a super PAC spending millions against you that has secret donors, it's going to be fairly ineffective to attack some anonymous named super PAC. If you knew the donors, you could actually attack the donors and say, you know, look, this guy is trying to buy this election.
Gentlemen, this has been great to have you both on with us, Anthony McCarthy, and I really appreciate you both taking your time. It's great to have you with us, Lindsay Mark Lewis, Executive Director of the Progressive Policy Institute. Look forward to having you back on with us again.
Great. Thank you guys for having me on.
Thanks so much. And Trey Lewis, President of the Baltimore Area Young Republicans.
Thank you, Mark. And make sure everyone listens to Listen Up every Friday, 7 to 7:00 p.m.
He's learning the tricks.
He's learning the tricks of the trade.
Thanks, Trey.
Gentlemen, thank you both so much.
No problem.
Thank you.
When we come back from this brief break, a very brief break, we're going to be joined by three folks from an article in this morning's paper about what's going on in the Gunpowder River. And we'll be taking your calls for that. And then at the top of the hour, we are going to be joined by three members, the leaders of the three firefighters unions in the city. Chief Clacker was going to join us, but backed out. We'll read that email as well from his office. He was supposed to be here at 5 o'clock today, but declined at the last minute. But we will have others on to talk about this very important issue facing the city of Baltimore. So stay with us. We'll be right back.